I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a longtime Seattle Times sports columnist has quit, saying the paper refused to publish a column about the fight to protect girls' sports. Plus, more layoffs at Starbucks HQ, and Seattle teachers are preparing to strike, and why wouldn't they? We're going to pay them to do it. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. A very good day for Common Sense, a very bad day for the Seattle Times and far-left ideologues. This morning, a longtime Seattle Times sports columnist named Matt Calkins announced that he quit his job at the Seattle Times after the paper spiked a column he wrote about the fight to protect girls' sports. Here's the post he put up on X. After 11 years as a sports columnist at the Seattle Times, I've decided to resign. It was entirely my choice, and it was not an easy one. The impetus was the Times declining to run a column I wrote from the perspective of two female student athletes who were opposed to competing against biological males. It was one of several pieces of mine that had been spiked, and I no longer felt like I could properly do my job as a columnist. I lay out the situation in greater detail in the link below, but I want to say that I enjoyed my time with the paper, find the talent there to be immense, and have no animosity toward anyone who works there. It was just time for a change. So in his brand new Substack, which he launched this morning with his announcement that he had quit the Seattle Times, Matt Calkins wrote, "I was a sports columnist at the Times for 11 years. This is why I resigned." And in it, he also links to the column that he attempted to write after the rally that we had with Women Are Real and with female athletes outside Climate Pledge Arena late in July. So this was sort of the beginning of the end for Matt Calkins' time at the Seattle Times. And I saw him there, you know, at the rally that we had. He was trying to cover it, ends up writing a story about it from the perspective of the female athletes, and that is what the Seattle Times decided not to publish. He wrote about Annalee Wilson and Frances Stout. Now, Annalee Wilson was at this rally. You'll remember what happened to her. She was harassed by the co-owner of the Storm. He said, "One thing Wilson emphasized to me at the rally was that she wasn't anti-trans. Another student athlete named Frances Stout, who said she's endured daily verbal abuse after refusing to play against a biological boy in a basketball game, echoed Wilson's sentiment. So that was the thesis of my column," which you can read here, "that supporting the separation of biological females and males doesn't automatically make you transphobic. So let's stop throwing those labels around." And indeed, I read the column that he's now made public that the Seattle Times wouldn't publish, and it wasn't like, can't be women, even though that's true, but it wasn't like this very, you know, right wing, whatever they want to label it. It was literally talking about this issue from the perspective of two teenage girls who have been called all sorts of things. And again, at the rally that we had where he wrote this story based off of outside Climate Pledge Arena, you know, it was a happy rally in support of Sophie Cunningham. Nobody had any bigoted signs. Nobody had any bigoted words. It was about supporting girls and women. It wasn't anti-trans. And it was about just wanting truth to prevail and wanting the promise of Title IX and fairness in girls' sports. And then you go inside and what happened to Annalee Wilson as she was sitting front row when the co-owner of the Storm, Celeste Keaton, came over to her and told her she was effing crazy and how dare you pull this SHIT in there. And what sane person, what sane sports columnist would not walk away from all of that understanding, like, hey, maybe these girls aren't the hateful ones. Maybe the people who are threatening to kill them, who are harassing them at a basketball game, maybe there's more to that. Maybe we shouldn't be calling these girls transphobic. That's all that Matt Calkins was attempting to do. And the Seattle Times said, no thanks. And again, this is a sports columnist. It's not a sports reporter. A columnist, you hire them for their point of view. You hire them to give their opinion. And in this case, not a controversial opinion. 80% of Americans feel the same way. And even when you have an issue like that, the Seattle Times says, we're not going to print it. And according to Matt Calkins, it wasn't the first time that they spiked a story of his that he didn't feel was all that controversial. I got a chance to speak with Matt Calkins right after he made this decision public. Here's part of our conversation.
I'm not going to sit here and like bash the Seattle Times, pretend like that was a waste of 11 years, because I got to do a lot of fun things. But there was just kind of one thing that was bothering me. Pretty much any time that I tried to write a column that, we'll say, went against the Seattle Times grain, if you will. Maybe it's challenging the U.S. women's soccer team on their equal pay dispute, or maybe it was, you know, talking to a coach who was a high school basketball coach who was imploring people not to stereotype cops. And eventually they just said, you know, stop trying to write these, I guess, unorthodox columns that kind of go against the grain. You know, which is stick to sports, if you will, stick to the Mariners and the Seahawks and kind of analyzing trades and all that kind of thing. And I just felt like, you know, they can do whatever they want to do. They're a private business. They hired me. So I'm not going to pretend like I'm a victim here. But I feel like there are a lot of stories out there where sports met politics, sports met culture. And I feel like I just had common sense views on a lot of things that I didn't really see in the paper. And it all kind of came to a head when I tried to write about the trans issue. Interviewed a couple of girls, Anna Lee Wilson, Frances Stott Unum, just basically girls who've had to compete against transgender females and weren't comfortable with it. And I tried to put that out there. They didn't want to run it. And it was just kind of, I just kind of had enough. I didn't storm off or anything. I just kind of said, I don't think this is the right fit anymore. You know, there's such an emphasis on diversity in newspapers, but I feel like the diversity is mainly cosmetic when they're looking to, you know, diversify their newsroom. And diversity of thought almost seems like a non-starter. And you know, I don't see other people at the Seattle Times trying to write the kind of articles that I'm writing. So it's not like it's just me. I think it's definitely more the content. And that was just where I kind of said, okay, this isn't a good fit anymore.
So I saw you obviously at the rally that we had. And in full disclosure, we know each other a little bit, you know, throughout the years. I mean, we've both been in the Seattle media landscape, you know, for quite a long time. And so I saw you at the rally outside covering, you know, the rally outside the Climate Pledge arena. And obviously you interviewed two of the young girls who've been on this show, et cetera. So what was your like hope in being out there? Were you kind of just there to see if a story came of it, or did you already have, you know, a personal opinion on the boys and girls sports issue?
I did have an opinion. I wanted to write something for a couple reasons. One, I just don't feel like we've really had an angle that covered this story from the standpoint of the girls themselves, right? I feel like, you know, we talk about being a voice for the voiceless a lot at the Seattle Times. And I feel like girls like Frances, girls like Annalie have not had a voice. So I wanted to get that out there. I wasn't sure what I was going to write. And then after I talked to Annalie and saw her, you know, everything that happened with the storm owner, I'm like, we got to get something out there. This isn't just the story in Seattle. This is like a story of the sports story in the country right now. And so I ended up calling Frances as well. And I put together a story for 3 days later, like Friday morning. And the editors looked at it and said, we'll get back to you later the week and or next week. And they told me on Monday, we're still looking at it. Wednesday, they said, we're going to take this to like the top two of the paper. And on Thursday, I got a call saying, we're not running it because you didn't tell us what you were doing in advance. And
is that
it didn't
unusual?
Really make sense to
is
me.
That unusual, that whole process that you just described?
Yes, that's unusual. Okay. Yeah, for all that to happen. It's usually just like, okay, we'll take a look at it. Here's some notes. But that didn't happen that day. So it just seemed like a 6-day event to you know, figure out a way to not get it into the paper. Which is a bummer because I think our readers, or excuse me, I guess my former readers, are starving for that kind of column. I think they want to know that there's somebody at the Times who is in the middle, you know, on a lot of these issues, and they want someone that they can relate to on this. And I really feel that if this column did run, it would have been, I would have gotten overwhelmingly positive feedback, maybe not within the newsroom itself, but I think this is something that readers really want. I think you've discovered that along the way, talking about this, how much kind of the everyday people agree with you. But it just wasn't in the cards for the Times for this article.
And you quit on the spot when they told you they weren't going to run it?
I did quit on the spot. And as I say in my Substack, it wasn't a rage quit. Yeah. It might have seemed like that from their opinion, like a very abrupt resignation. But I was prepared to do it just because of all the articles that had been spiked in the past. I judge columnists based on two things, based on what they write and based on what they don't write. I think there are a lot of writers out there who are very talented but shy away from some of the more controversial topics. And I understand why. I totally understand why, especially in sports, which is typically supposed to be an escape, right? But I do think that these subjects are very important. The fact that I wasn't able to write about them at all, I just felt like I couldn't do my job as a sports columnist. You know, I could weigh in on Seahawks trades here and there, but I think if I truly wanted to be a real columnist who was serving the readers in that capacity, I didn't feel like I could do my job there at the Times anymore. And I didn't feel like things were going to change. So I quit. There was no yelling. There was no cussing. There was a meeting with the executive editor about an hour after that. And we just kind of agreed that we're at different places and we decided to go our separate ways.
That's what bravery looks like. I mean, and I have so much gratitude for him because, and what a thing to do to walk, and I've been through this, right? And we could talk about that in a moment. But, you know, having heard the stories of these girls, felt that they were compelling, and as a columnist whose job it is to give your point of view, being told, no, that point of view isn't welcome here. When it's welcome most places in the country and in many places in Washington State and by many Americans, it just shows what the Times has become. The Times is not willing to push any sort of boundary editorially unless it's on the left. I mean, how many cuckoo columns have we talked about on the show on the left that are just nutty? And this is a very reasonable, moderate position to take. And so he just quit on the spot. I mean, hats off to him. Francis Stout, one of the athletes he interviewed for that column that the Times wouldn't run, responded to his decision to resign this morning. Here's what she said. Thank you, Matt Calkins. I was one of the female athletes you interviewed, and I truly appreciate the way you treated me. You were fair, listened to my story without judgment, and wanted to share my experience, even when the Seattle Times refused to let it be heard. Seattle Times deserves to be called out. It has become a left-wing rag that suppresses stories and viewpoints that challenge its preferred political narrative. Even at 17, I can see eerie similarities to what we've learned in history class about communism, censorship, and the control of information. To think that a 17-year-old female athlete and her story could be considered a threat to a powerful media machine like the Seattle Times shows that we have them against the ropes. We need to keep punching. I won't quit, and I'm asking all of you to help deliver the knockout punch this November. Vote yes on Initiative 638. Thank you, Matt Calkins, for having the guts it takes in standing by your principles, refusing to participate in this censorship, and giving female athletes a voice. Frances Stout. I mean, she's just so eloquent and what she's done to fight for this. And again, and to hit all those obstacles, to put yourself out there as a teenage girl and basically to be told you're transphobic and for the media to ignore, by and large, very few legacy news outlets have covered this issue fairly, if at all. And we've seen how many stories in the Seattle Times were there on that brave, inspiring transgender athlete who kept winning state titles, a biological boy who for years on end stole state titles from girls. Thankfully, I think they've graduated now, so maybe girls will finally have a chance in those categories to capture state titles. So you can do that, but God forbid you say, hey, let's not call these teen girls transphobic. And read the article for yourself. So Matt launched a Substack. It's Matty C, M-A-T-T-Y-C-E-E Substack. And he has not only sort of his explanation of what happened behind the scenes, but also the column that the Seattle Times would not let him run. And from a personal perspective, you know, and I obviously was in touch with Matt this morning to do this interview. I almost had secondhand anxiety because, as you guys know, I've been through this exact scenario. I quit my job at Fox 13 in Seattle, you know, really feeling like this was probably the only way I was going to be able to speak difficult truths. And I remember the anxiety and the tears and all of that of those first 24 hours wondering, wow, I just let go of a $200,000 a year job. You know, and at that time I was, what, 32, 33? I just moved in with my then boyfriend and I'm like, what is going to happen here? And then you guys had my back in a way I never expected. I mean, within an hour of launching Undivided, I knew that I was going to be okay. And so to take that leap and to have sane people catch you when you do it is a feeling that I can't describe unless you've been there. And that's what I just reiterated to Matt when I talked to him this morning is like, you're going to be fine. I promise you, you're going to be fine because people are going to respect you for what you did. And that's what it's all about. And so, you know, I encourage you to have Matt's back like you had my back and have the back of anyone who's willing to speak simple truths in such a toxic period in American history. So we're going to have the full interview I did with Matt Calkins up this Sunday on Sundays with Subscribers. We get into sort of the newsroom environment at the Seattle Times. So if you'd like to become a subscriber and watch that full episode this Sunday, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. Yeah, we talk about a variety of things and kind of what's next for him. And I think the answer to that is he doesn't know. Although I did see on X this morning, I think Clay Travis sort of soft offered him a job for his new venture that he's about to launch, the founder of Outkick. So I know that Matt's going to land on his feet. And as I told him this morning, I haven't regretted my decision to leave Legacy News, not one second of one day, no matter how hard it's gotten, especially in the last 6 months with all the lawfare, I still have never regretted that decision. And in large part, that is because all of you being there when I needed you the most, and being there ever since so that we could do this show and we could say things that I think need to be said. And for Matt, I think he's going to do fantastic, whatever he does after the Times. You don't need the Times, Matt Calkins. You don't need the Times. All right, coming up next, the city of Shoreline votes to pass a resolution opposing two of the initiatives that are going to be on the ballot in November. We'll discuss first. We're all saving for retirement. We're all trying to make sure that we can have the retirement of our dreams. And you want to make sure that you're going to have enough to really make it a reality and that your retirement portfolio isn't opened up to unnecessary risk. Risk is always a factor, of course, but reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwer Capital just to get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. He'll go through how Bulwer Capital is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get that second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk podcast, and we'll have a new episode of Swamp Watch with our friend Zach Abraham coming up this weekend. All right, so the city of Shoreline, on a vote of 5-0, voted to pass a resolution to make it the official position of the city of Shoreline that they are opposed to the initiative to protect girls' sports and opposed to the initiative to restore parental rights. How crazy are these people? Absolutely nuts. Action of resolution number 567, opposing Washington State ballot initiative 638 concerning participation in athletics at K-12 public schools and opposing Washington State initiative 001 concerning parental rights relating to their children in public schools. I mean, that is absolutely insane. Think about this, 80% issue, and you've got all five members of the Shoreline City Council, which is, if you're not familiar, just north of Seattle. Have they really become that lefty up there too? Like there's no dissent whatsoever on the Shoreline City Council. And I don't know if they actually believe and they're all that fringe loony or if it's just the fact that these transgender activists will do this. They jump city to city, city to city council, demanding that they get their way. And if they don't get their way, you're a hateful, horrible, bigot, transphobe, and they'll make sure you don't win your next election. Here's some of the testimony that happened at this meeting.
I fled here to to Washington 3 years ago. If I return, I will likely be arrested and sent to jail for fucking, for nothing. And that's just, you can put it together.
Yeah, there is a trans genocide going on in this country. If I were in Idaho right now, I would be in prison for using the bathroom.
If I said I wanted you dead and you said I wanted to live, what's the middle ground there? Okay. I don't see trans people on this council. I don't know. Obviously I'm not going to transvestigate anybody here, but nobody's talked about that. It's pretty obvious in politics today.
Red flag alert about anti-trans genocide in the United States. Brian Haywood and his hateful ilk know that they can't push as hard in Washington as they've pushed in other states.
Saw a thing about how trees struggle if there's only one, but if it's in a forest, it can actually thrive. We can't have just these little specks where we're safe.
I'm a transgender woman.
Oh my God.
I'm also a mom of three teenagers. And I've spent 20 years as an engineer, which mostly means I've been paid to read specifications closely and notice what they actually say. That means genital inspections for our 110 girls playing middle school and high school sports in the state.
Cisgender women don't take testosterone blockers, and transgender women do, usually.
I thank the council for sticking up for its trans constituents. But, yeah.
Please save me from this hell I'm living in. And isn't that a song? Save me from this hell I'm living in. From a musical.
Wrong Disney movie.
It's from a musical. It's fine. Les Mis, so I think. Pretty sure. Those are the same nut jobs who were at the Seattle City Council meeting demanding that they pass $300,000 in funding for trans quote-unquote refugees, and some of them were even telling the same lies about genital exams. Then there's that one guy who says he fled Idaho because they want to put him in prison for life if he uses the wrong bathroom, which is, of course, not true. And then there was even this individual who mixed up trans Ari, the detransitioner we've had on the show, with our friend Ari Hoffman.
Brian Haywood's initiatives and the people who support them are dangerous. One of the people that Brian Haywood strongly associates with is named Ari Hoffman, and he has been known to go into local parks to intimidate people.
Okay. Ari Hoffman will be very surprised to find out that he's accused of going into local parks to intimidate people. And D-Trans Ari hasn't gone into local parks to intimidate people. You'll remember that D-Trans Ari was assaulted at Cal Anderson Park by a gang of homeless transgender people for the crime of wearing a hat that said, "Make Common Sense Great Again," that is one of our pieces of swag for the show. So these people are nutty, but then the Shoreline City Council is like, yeah, oh, I side with you guys. Yay for this resolution. And then there's this whole issue of how can a city take a formal position against a ballot measure ahead of an election? We saw this with some of the other initiatives like the anti-tax measures, where the city took a lot of cities would take a formal position against them because it was going to take money away from them. They're like, oh, we can't have that. So the whole insanity of that situation aside, I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, should it be legal for cities and counties to take official positions on ballot measures? Yes or no? Nicole?
No.
No, of course not.
No, because you represent everyone, which includes people that don't think like you, and stop trying to tell them how to vote.
Well, and even in the city of Shoreline, there's going to be a hell of a lot of people who don't think boys should be in girls' sports and who believe parents have a right to know what's happening with their kids at school, which is why we're going to vote yes on both of those, right? We're voting yes. 92% of you say no, cities should not be able to do this. Mike says, absolutely not. The point of these ballot measures is to let the people decide. Travis, individuals may take a side no matter where they come from, but counties and cities are supposed to represent everyone within their boundaries. Cities and counties as an entity themselves shouldn't officially take political sides, but instead serve the benefit of their citizens. And I'm fine if they come out and say, hey, you know, this has budget implications for us. Here's what those budget implications would be, just so you're armed with that information when you go to vote. Like, not a big deal. Todd says, when we say cities and counties, are you saying the council's elected officials could say what they want, but then the voters will hold them accountable? Yeah, but taking a vote on it. I'm fine if a council member wants to come out and say, oh, I don't support protecting girls' sports on their own, but we're talking about an official resolution from the city council? That just makes no sense. Stop. And also, just stop giving in to the mob. Stop giving in to the mob. That's just absolutely ridiculous. These people are unhinged. And Matt Calkins can't share a column with some teen girls with a very calm, sane, rational opinion on the other side without it being spiked. And we listen to those people? Absolutely outrageous. All right, more layoffs in the city of Seattle, specifically at Starbucks HQ. And I knew this was going to happen because, remember, Starbucks is opening, and I think they're going to be called out at some point for kind of lying about this, but they've claimed that this second HQ in Nashville that they're opening is just that, a second HQ, and that they're not shutting down the HQ they have in Seattle. I just disagree. I think that they're trying to wind down operations in Seattle. So they are laying off 224 employees from HQ. And that includes workers who declined to move to Nashville. So basically, and this is part of restructuring, they said that there were some jobs going to Nashville, and if people didn't want to move, then obviously they were going to be laid off. So 224 total layoffs, 104 of those support roles, 120 of those are people who specifically declined to move to Nashville. The company said in a statement that they reviewed their functions to sharpen their focus, prioritize work, reduce complexity, and lower costs. We are streamlining our real estate footprint, including consolidating U.S. regional support office space and taking several other steps with leases and lease commitments, the spokesperson said. I would try to get the hell out of Washington State as well and Seattle. You know, you got the millionaires tax coming, which isn't going to be unless we do what in November? Vote yes to repeal it. Vote yes to repeal it. But it's just the latest in a long, long list of things that socialists and liberals and progressives have done to make it very inhospitable to do business here. There's a reason there's a 37% office vacancy rate in downtown Seattle. And it's not because of the pandemic, because it's the highest office vacancy rate of any major city in the nation. There's cities that are not dealing with this. And you can't blame the pandemic for everything forever, okay? Are there some offices that, you know, probably found that remote work was just fine and they sent people home so they didn't have to pay the cost of a big lease? Absolutely. But what we're seeing in Seattle is above and beyond that phenomenon that happened across the country. More evidence. TikTok. Laying off 75 employees in Washington State, specifically in Bellevue. And Bellevue has been a place that has withstood a little bit of the anti-business climate because they've really gone out of their way to try to be more friendly to business, but they can't do anything about the state policies. That impacts them too. So TikTok, TT Commerce and Global Services notified the Employment Security Department of 75 permanent layoffs at their Bellevue office. So just they just keep coming. How much longer can Democrats deny the reality of capital flight and what their policies have done to businesses? Do we have to wait till it's a literal ghost town with actual tumbleweeds blowing down I-90 before we do something about this? All right, we'll get to our segment, Unbelievable, coming up next. Seattle teachers, I know this will shock you, threatening to strike and keep your kids out of school. First, if you're looking to save some money as a family, when's the last time you had somebody reevaluate your insurance? Maybe you've just kind of set it and forget it, and you've been working with the same carrier for years and years and years. Do me a favor. Take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, and it doesn't cost you anything, and it really just is kind of a second opinion. They'll go out, they'll shop their market of carriers for you, they'll come back, have a phone conversation with you about their recommendations, and they're a local company. 11,000 people have taken the First Mark Challenge and been a First Mark Challenge victory. What does a victory look like? Well, it could be that they save you a lot of money on your insurance, like they did for Mike and I. It could be that they get you better insurance, or that they find out that you are paying for insurance that you don't even need, or you have insurance policies that are redundant. And they're just the experts in this arena. They're fantastic. You pick up the phone, you get someone right here in Washington State. So give First Mark Insurance a try. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. What are you waiting for? Your savings could start tomorrow. And with that, let's get to our segment. Boop. All right. Seattle teachers are threatening to strike with days until the school year begins. And it's not a surprise, because what did Democrats do last year? They passed a law that allows for pay for striking workers.
Allowing striking workers to access unemployment insurance benefits creates a more level playing field for workers to have the resources they need to effectively bargain for better working conditions.
Okay. In other words, it gives them all the leverage. All the leverage. So the companies, the government entities, they have no leverage left. Because what's the key point of leverage? Is, all right, well, you're going to go on strike, but eventually that's going to hurt your pocketbook enough where you've got to come to the table in good faith. And so now there's no good faith negotiations. And so I said, when they passed this, I said the very first school year when this is in effect, they're going to strike. The Seattle teachers are absolutely going to strike, or they'll have so much leverage that they'll be able to get some insane salary raise because the school district has no choice. So here it is from Fox 13, Seattle teachers prepared to strike if no contract agreement is made. I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. And the deadline is September 1st. School is supposed to start September 2nd. So we've got maybe a week and a half. Fox 13 spoke to Heather Barker, who's one of the members of the bargaining team. So she's a teacher at Captain Stephen Z. Sanislo Elementary School, has been with the district for 20 years. She tells Fox 13 that teachers say they're overloaded by work. Don't you work? Don't you have 3 months off a year? What do you mean you're overloaded by work? And you're making like, what, 150 grand a year? She said there's a lot of what we've been calling pressurization and trying to reclaim some of our time so that we as educators can accomplish the things that we know that we need to do to best serve our kids and build relationships with our families. Well, maybe stop spending so much time on wacko curriculum. Maybe stop spending the entire month of May and June teaching kids about Pride Month and all sorts of nonsense. She said other areas of concern are maintaining a special education program that benefits all students and providing educators and staff with a livable wage. Again, these teachers are making well over $100,000. These teachers are making a ton of money in the city of Seattle. And we have some of the best paid teachers in the nation in Washington State. Well, we have some of the poorest results in the nation. Mississippi is now eclipsing us. And why is it? Because these teachers do stuff like this. The Washington Education Association, one of the most powerful political forces in the state, and they use that power to advocate for themselves, to advocate for their bottom line, not to, I don't know, work to make education better for the kids they claim to care so much about. And I'm not saying every teacher is to blame. I know, I always get emails like, stop vilifying all teachers. I'm not vilifying all teachers. But frankly, if you're a member of the WEA and you continue to give your hard-earned money to the WEA, you are part of the problem at this point, because you're funding a mechanism that is working against you, is working against your values, is working against taxpayers, and is ultimately working against kids. So the time to opt out is now. Optouttoday.com, optouttoday.com, very handy website that you can use to be able to opt out. And meanwhile, SPS has a budget deficit of around $87 million to $100 million. But they have no leverage. Because the teachers aren't worried about missing a paycheck. It's no problem for them. They're going to get paid while they're out on the picket line. There's no punishment. So now SPS, $100 million budget deficit. It was already threatening layoffs, by the way. The school district was already saying, we're so far in the hole, we might have to lay people off. And now you've got the union strong-arming them with the help of Washington State Democrats and Governor Bob Ferguson. And again, I'm not the only one who predicted this. Every person with half a brain cell predicted that we would have an uptick in strikes this year when the pay for striking workers law went into effect. A law that, by the way, they tried in California, and even Gavin Newsom said, this is too extreme. He vetoed it. This policy was so extreme that Gavin Newsom vetoed it. And where Washington's like, nah, we're good. Insane. Because the unions control the Democratic Party. All right. Meanwhile, the state of Washington is failing children in more than one way. Not only failing children at school, but also failing children who are in vulnerable situations and under the care of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. DCYF is about as broken as a government entity can be. We've had so many kids who have died that are supposed to be, you know, being monitored by the Department of Children, Youth, and Families because these kids have been allowed to be left in homes where there's active drug abuse happening. And Democrats are sticking to the Keeping Families Together Act that says, oh no, active fentanyl abuse around children, no big deal. Just, we'll send you, true story, we'll send you a free lockbox. And that way you can shoot up your fentanyl and then you can carefully place the fentanyl and the needle into the lockbox and lock it before you pass out and leave your child unattended for 5 to 6 hours while you do the fetty leans over your couch. That's what's happening in the state of Washington. And now a state audit is finding that DCYF broke laws in their child care investigations. And some of this stuff is very concerning. Says a new state audit has found that Washington's Department of Children, Youth, and Families broke state law and policy requirements regarding investigations of unlicensed child care providers. Gee, wait a second. Wasn't the media racist for looking into child care providers, I thought? They also allegedly broke laws and policy requirements regarding investigations of child abuse and neglect and the agency's gift card program for families in need. The Office of the Washington State Auditor released its accountability audit of the agency on Monday. It covers July 2024 through June of 2025. And I guarantee once they audit from 2025 to 2026, all this is going to get much worse. The audit identified three formal findings, two of which involve noncompliance with state law significant enough to trigger mandatory reporting to the governor and state legislative committees. So they have these triggers built into the state law that basically say if DCYF is failing so badly that it's putting children in jeopardy, it triggers mandatory reporting to the governor and the legislature. That's the stage that we're at right now. It says the department failed to initiate a complaint response within one business day for three investigations, missed the five-day window for unannounced visits in five cases, and took as long as 39 days beyond the required 45-day deadline to close five other investigations. And we're talking about, when we say investigations and complaints, every single one of these, you're talking about potentially a kid's life on the line. And that's how long it's taking them to do all of this. The audit also found the department failed to post information on its website, as required by law, that a provider was operating without a license in five of the cases reviewed. State law requires such posting so the public can verify whether a child care provider is properly licensed. And here's one that's just obvious, because the grift just keeps on grifting. The audit also included extensive findings involving DCYF's gift card program, which distributed nearly $2 million during the audit period to help families with essentials and transportation. Reviewing five regional offices, auditors found significant lapses at four of them. Get this. At the Seattle MLK office, auditors could not verify that a single one of 15 sampled gift card distributions had the required client signature and found 73 gift cards accounted for entirely. 73 gift cards at the Seattle MLK office alone. Where'd they go? I could tell you exactly where they went. Yeah. The people working there just pocketed them so they could use the gift cards for themselves. So you have like children that you're supposed to buy essentials for, food, transportation, and you got people just stealing them. DCYF is one of the most fraud-filled agencies in this, well, for sure in the state, but maybe even in the country. And the fact that you still have the same head of DCYF and she hasn't been fired yet is absolutely outrageous. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. It is Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. They do events all year long. They also help landlords on an individual basis with screening forms, etc. And then they're fighting for private property rights as well. That's a big part of being a member, is helping to support their fight to defend defend your private property rights. They've got some key cases coming up. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. It is Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right, just a quick follow-up on a story that we've talked about quite a bit on this show, and that is California's effort to pass what we've called and others have called the Stop Nick Shirley Act. So, of course, Nick Shirley goes to California, speaking of fraud, and he finds a ton of it. And he's been down there, and Gavin Newsom has just been vilifying him left and right, rather than, I don't know, looking into the actual fraud that is playing out in California. I mean, he found, like, was it a healthcare provider or something? There's like dozens of them in the same building, and they've got people with like luxury cars pulled up. I mean, clearly fraudulent stuff going on. And so Democrats started this, you know, effort to basically pass a law that helps these people who are engaged in giving government services with taxpayer funds, helps them hide their addresses so you can't publicly search the database of like childcare providers, for instance, and find addresses so independent journalists can't go there and verify, oh, is there actually a childcare facility here, like Nick Shirley did in Minneapolis and like he's done in California as well. It's called their Safe at Home program. It's a confidential address program. And then also it has restrictions on publishing the personal identifying informations or images of specific workers online with the intent to cause harm or intimidation. So Nick Shirley couldn't do like what he did in Minneapolis or California without leaving their names out and blurring all their images. So this is about protecting fraudsters. That's what California Democrats are wasting their time on. Protecting fraudsters. As opposed to, I don't know, it's a crazy idea, investigating fraud. Nick Shirley posted this update. The legislator who proposed this bill is Mia Bonta, the wife of Attorney General Rob Bonta. This is something he had pointed out at the beginning. The Attorney General of California's wife is trying to silence me and other journalists who are exposing fraud. And yeah, I think that's definitely something that's relevant to point out, the connection there. All right, it is Thursday. That's when we check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Florida primary in the books. Byron Donalds wins the GOP nod for governor. Not a surprise.
Yeah, I'm not a surprise at all. I thought he was going to win by a lot more. Out of all the Republicans who did vote, he didn't secure half of those people. The rest was spread out between all the other candidates that we had on the Republican side. But hopefully they can all unite.
Yeah, because there were more Republicans who voted against Byron Donalds than voted for Byron Donalds. Does he think that now that he's won the nomination, Ron DeSantis will give him his endorsement because he had stayed out of it?
Yeah, I do think now that it's, you know, kind of cut and dried and DeSantis doesn't have to like choose between the front runner Byron and then his appointed Lieutenant Governor Jay.
Yeah.
I think now he might make a little bit more of a public statement about, you know, getting all the Republicans kind of together to make sure that they can secure this win. Because David Jolly, the Democrat nominee, he used to be a Republican. Uh-huh. And he was a Republican up until 2018. And then last year he registered as a Democrat so he could run for governor. So he's a very centrist type guy. So I think to make sure that the center Republicans who don't like Byron stay on board, DeSantis might have to say something.
Yeah, for sure. On the flip side, a little bit of an upset in the Florida Senate race. Angie Nixon, who's just a cuckoo socialist, ended up defeating, I guess, the Democrat who more people expected to make it through. So how crazy is she?
She's pretty crazy. We've actually talked about her on the show before. She's, you know, sat on the House floor screaming a couple times. I think we have some footage of that.
When black folks are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
When black folks are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
I will not allow you to destroy our democracy. That is a violation of the Constitution.
Yeah, we don't need that on the floor of the United States Senate. You know, what's interesting is the Democrat, I guess, that had a ton of money, like multi-million dollar war chest was Alex Vindman, who's that lieutenant colonel who was like a key witness against Trump in his first impeachment trial. And people are like, where'd all that money go? Because they say he like barely ran a campaign, but he had this huge war chest and then he ended up losing to the socialist.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, you have a lot of Democrats that are a little worried about her coming into the general election. She's going to be going up against Ashley Moody, who was appointed by DeSantis after Marco Rubio went up to the White House. Mm-hmm. And they don't think that, you know, we have a huge Latino base here, whether they're Democrat or Republican. And the Democrat Latinos are not going to vote for anybody with socialist tied to their name. They're just not going to do it. So I don't know if she stands much of a chance when it comes to the general election. I think they would have rather had the other guy.
Yeah, even though he's kind of an oddball as well. But what are you going to do?
Yeah.
All right. So back to school in Florida. And there's some new laws that are taking effect. Some of them are fine. I don't see the controversy. Like, they're mandating cursive writing classes for grades 3 through 5. I like that. Yeah. I feel like you should be able to pen a nice handwritten letter.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I also think there's a lot of, like, dexterity to learn when you're learning in cursive. And yeah. A lot of hand-eye coordination, but I do think this is more about kids being able to read historical documents on their own. Because in this same bill, they're also requiring schools to have portraits of Abraham Lincoln and George Washington on display in a very conspicuous location at schools. So I do think this has more to do with kids' ability to read historical documents than it does to pen their pen pal a letter.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense. Also includes requiring autism-specific training for teachers and administrators. No issues there. Here's the interesting one. So explain this to me. They've got to turn over some disciplinary students' files on students to colleges?
Yeah. So any student that has potential threats on their disciplinary records coming out of high school, those records need to be handed up to the colleges that they're possibly going to, I guess, as a forewarning to these schools to keep an extra eye on these kids. Within this same bill, it also is the one that authorizes certain professors to carry guns on campus. So this is a very interesting one because, you know, you go from being a minor to an adult while you're in college. So I didn't know those things could follow you around.
Yeah, and I guess it would depend on how serious. Like, if you've got a kid who's, like, threatened to shoot up schools and stuff, I mean, you know, yeah, the college should probably know about that. But also, you know, if you had a kid who had some disciplinary issues, you know, in high school years, is that really fair? And also, if I'm a college and I'm getting that record, like, hey, Joe Schmo, who's about to come there, you know, had some violent tendencies, you're just going to revoke his, you know, you're not going to let him come to college. So yeah. I don't know about that. I'm of two minds about that.
I also kind of see it like when you go to college, you are no longer kind of under the thumb of your parents. So maybe you become a little bit more of like a rogue threat because you're no longer being like, you know, living at home with your family, people who can keep consistent eyes on you and stuff like that. So maybe if it is a certain level of threat, that makes sense. How do you decide and who decides that?
Yeah, interesting stuff. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Oh man, we got to change that soon when DeSantis is gone and Trump is going to be gone. Then I'm going to have to remake that old graphic. All right, there's a lot of listings on the market right now if you've perused lately. So if you're thinking about selling your home, you might be worried about that because there's a lot of competition and your home needs to stand out. Our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com says you can still get a good price for your home. You just have to put a little more effort in on the front end.
Yeah, I mean, there's like 10 different markets going on.
Sure.
It's by city. It's by price point. It's by location. And there are some markets that are performing surprisingly well. But there's far more that are being challenged with longer days on market, with price drops, et cetera. We are going more towards a balanced market. Mm. It still can happen. You can sell your home for a lot of money. You've just got to try harder than you used to.
Yeah. And so you need to try harder. He's going to try harder for you. And that means improved marketing. I mean, all the things that Wes and his team already do. Listing Boost concierge service. They come in, they do a pre-inspection, which gets rid of some of the uncertainty on the back end. And then they come in, they can help with cosmetic upgrades to your home, and their staging and marketing, everything is just second to none. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to comments from the live stream, shall we? There she is. On Seattle Times sports columnist Matt Colkins quitting over, you know, them not letting him talk about the effort to protect girls' sports, Nanook of the North says, the Seattle Times lacks diverse perspectives, doing a disservice to its readers in the broader region. And I'm glad Matt pointed that out. And again, we'll have much more with Matt on the Sunday show this week, is like they, Claire, came to claim to care so much about diversity, equity, inclusion, just not diversity of opinion and inclusion of different opinions, right. God forbid. Like the
article is so fair.
It's so fair. And the only Republicans who they'll allow to like do any guest editorials have to be anti-Trump Republicans. Like it's gotta be a diehard anti-Trump Republican. I mean, with a few exceptions, but those are the only ones who they'll talk to regularly.
But also it just has to be somebody that they can just throw up their hands and not be associated with, where right. he's an employee and so they couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
Matthew Cook says the Times didn't want to print an actual news story. The Times are just leftist narrative pushers.
Yeah. B. Larson. So does the Times just feel that 80% of Americans are wrong when it comes to trans athletes?
They
yes, because
care.
They're more enlightened than you. Mm-hmm. You silly. You're just a bigot. You're not enlightened as they are.
Milkman says, start an undivided newsletter and make Matt the writer.
Yeah, he might get bored doing that. I think he's got his own voice and needs to be doing his own thing.
He should still be doing sports stuff. He's very good at it. A little more free to do so.
Well, I mean, you were a columnist at the Times, one of the largest newspapers in America for 11 yes. years. He can get a good job somewhere else. So, all right. On the Shoreline Resolution opposing the two Let's Go Washington initiatives, Tara MC says, have they all been diagnosed with mental illness? If not, they likely need to be evaluated. I do think that there's an element of that going on.
I know. And, you know, by pulling these, you know, I don't want us to, we're not making fun of them. However, I mean, we kind of are.
Some of them.
The purpose is not just to make fun of them, but the purpose is to show that these people are the people that are dictating things like this, that are dictating policy or dictating these stances on the initiative. And it's outrageous.
Yeah, it is. And look, yeah, if you're living your life and just leaving people alone, I don't care.
No.
But full-grown man shows up in a pink dress with cat ears. Yeah,
Mom,
I'm making fun of you.
Mother
Sorry.
Of three
I'm making
teenagers.
Fun of you. Yeah.
Scary.
Slugger says, the social contagion should scare everyone. I feel sad for these people. Don't normalize crazy.
Right. On the Starbucks layoffs, Sherry says, I wish all the people and businesses leaving Washington State would honestly and openly state precisely why they are leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, like this is why. Yeah. Don't water it down. Like, oh, no, this is a second HQ. No, you come out and you say, as they did in private letters to the governor, like this is not a hospitable environment. And fight with us. Fight with us before you give up. At least try. Right.
Well, I think that the retaliation is what is nerve-wracking for people, but they
get over it.
Yeah, exactly. We're dealing with it.
Yeah, get over it. It sucks, I know. And you have a hell of a lot more money than we do to fight it, Seattle Times, the Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
On the Seattle teachers threatening to strike, because why wouldn't they? Mm-hmm. Metal Panzer says, these strike threats will be part of every school year from now on. Correct.
It's scary. Deploribus unum,
which means what, Nicole, from our America trivia? Deploribus unum.
That was in our trivia?
It was. Adam Forney got it right.
Oh,
come on.
One for all.
Out of many, one. Yes.
Good one.
Thank you.
Okay. Make the teachers pay over $1 million and watch the opposition to income tax skyrocket.
Yeah. Raise the teacher pay to over $1 million and then the initiative will pass to repeal the income
tax.
They
won't want to pay that.
On the audit showing DCYF is a failure, Allison says it's job security for the DCYF not to safeguard children. Giving them back or letting them stay with proven unsafe situations keeps the cycle going.
I'm from Chief Justice O'Dizzle. $4.99 super chat. Simple truth.
Oh, you don't have to read this one. I will.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure you're saying all Muslims must and will be sent home. Thank you for your attention to this matter. We probably won't read super chats like that in the future. Miranda, thanks for putting us there.
Whoops.
Look, free speech is free speech. It's just, you know, I don't think all Muslims need to go home. And some Muslims, America is their home. So where do you want them to go home to? Although I do agree that there's some aspects of certain Muslim countries that are not conducive to American society. And we can have that conversation. But just saying all Muslims need to go home when they might not have anywhere to go home to. Miranda said Miranda's trying to explain why she put it in. He wrote so many and got mad when I didn't put it in for you to read. Got it. Okay. Okay. Super chat does not guarantee I'm going to read it, but in this case I did, and you actually got a lot of attention for it. All right.
Also, sorry about Facebook issues again.
Yeah, Facebook is really having some challenges. And then yesterday, locals had an 8-hour outage yesterday.
That's wild.
8 hours.
Wild. Come on.
I don't feel so bad about Facebook because you don't pay for the show on Facebook.
Maybe so many people off.
That's true. All right. Let's get to our closing sanity check.
He's got to keep an eye on these things.
Yeah. All right, screeching leftist podcaster Jennifer Welch is trying to argue that President Trump has dementia, which is just offensive to people who actually have and families who have people with dementia in their lives, which is just such a sad, horrible disease that steals so much from them. And this is how Scott Jennings responded.
Meanwhile, this guy, this should be the lead story, is clearly suffering from massive mental decline. He is out of his mind with all of the show and tell procedures that go on in the Oval Office.
Two days ago, he gave
three press conferences
in a row. His response.
If you don't think he has dementia, let's just discuss the time that when he was on the campaign trail that he tried to perform oral sex on a microphone. If Joe Biden did this,
I hope this is what Democrats do next year. If this is the Democratic strategy, congratulations, America. You've already reelected Republican majorities as far as the eye can see.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Scott. And he's apparently reportedly in the running to be the next press secretary after Caroline Leavitt announced she's backing away, and he hasn't confirmed or denied. But I think that that would be highly entertaining. And there's literally no reason that that shouldn't be who President Trump chooses. All right. That has been our closing sanity check. A couple things. So we'll have Matt Calkins on the Sunday show this week. I am heading to New York City. I'm going to be there for a pro Sophie Cunningham rally in Brooklyn. The Indiana Fever are playing the Liberty. So I look forward to telling you guys all about that. And also, I know Annalie Wilson is going to be there. So that will be quite fun. So I'll have stories. We'll have the Sunday show. I felt like I had more housekeeping to do. Probably not. Show Matt Calkins some love today. Having been there, having been through it, it's been 5 years now. It is one of the most stressful things you will ever do, is giving up your career and your livelihood to take a stand for something you believe in. I think it'll work out well for him, but just showing a little bit of support today, I think, would go a long way. All right, that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. But as always, I do have a little bit more appreciation for our paid subscribers. I'm just being honest with you, okay? They give up $5 of their hard-earned money every month to make this show possible and to have made it possible for the past 5 years. We're coming up on our 5th anniversary of Undivided. So if you'd like to sign up, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Subscribers will see you Sunday. The rest of you will see you Monday back here on the live show at noon.